This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
In the late 1970s, Ben Martini was diagnosed with schizophrenia. A decade later, his brother Olivier was told he had the same disease. For the past 30 years, the Martini family has struggled to comprehend and cope with a devastating illness. Frustrated by a healthcare system lacking in resources and empathy, the imperfect science of medication, and the strain of mental illness on family relationships. Through it all, Olivier, an accomplished visual artist, drew. His sketches, comic strips, and portraits document his experience with and capture the essence of the frequently misunderstood disease of schizophrenia. In their new book, Bitter Medicine, Olivier's graphic narrative runs alongside the written account of his younger brother, award-winning author and playwright Clem Martini. The result is a family memoir that faces head-on the stigma attached to mental illness. I'm joined on the phone by Clem Martini. Welcome to People First Radio, Clem.
Hi.
Clem, in the fall of 1976, your youngest brother, Ben, became ill with schizophrenia, and 4 months later he was diagnosed. It was a difficult and challenging period for both him and your entire family. You were four brothers, along with your parents, and you write in the memoir, "We were all tired, I realized, between arguing and chasing and fighting and worrying. The entire family was drained. Medicate us all, I wanted to tell the nurses. We all need to recover. Maybe a long sleep will do the trick."
Yeah. It's the thing about schizophrenia, I think, is that it's an event. It's an event that... In addition to being a disorder and a disease, it's a lifelong disorder and disease. It is it's an event that changes an entire family. It is an event that turns everything upside down. Most people who encounter this disorder experience a kind of confusion about what's happened, how a person can change as utterly as that disorder changes the people they knew, how quickly it can occur, and then are equally confronted by what they can do about it, what role they might have played in it. And that event plays out in lots of ways, not only for the person who is most intimately affected, but for everyone in the family in different ways.
You wrote, "I felt betrayed, if not by Ben, then by life."
Well, it does feel like a betrayal. If you have family members who are close to you, to have that person snatched away, to have that person transformed, is very hard. It's very hard. It is utterly bewildering how you can know a person so well one moment and the next seemingly not know them at all, not be able to access their pain and their fear, not know what's causing it, not know what to do to fix it, to feel that upset yourself, to feel that upset within you, and wonder often if there isn't something wrong with yourself, if there isn't something that you have done. And the other thing to remember is that for those who experience schizophrenia, the incidence of suicide is very, very high. Among males, I believe it's 60% of males experiencing schizophrenia will try to kill themselves. It's 40% among females. Altogether, it's a 10 to 15% success rate. That's a terrible rate of mortality. And that kind of event leaves a huge gaping wound in a family. It's hard to recover from. It's difficult to understand. It leaves all kinds of questions unanswered. It takes years to recover from, and frequently it's that recovery is done in silence, on one's own, feeling enormous sense, an enormous sense that somehow you must have been responsible. That kind of experience goes on every day across this country in terms of mental illness.
Ben died as a consequence of his mental illness. And you mentioned in your writing that your family became nearly invisible in the community, and in a sense we became invisible even to ourselves.
Yeah, it's okay, there's several things to think about. One is that mental illness, first of all, is not dealt with very well by the public. It's misunderstood by the public. There's a sense that somehow you have brought it upon yourself, or that it's generated within the family. There's no or very little acknowledgement that it is a disorder like many disorders, like muscular dystrophy, like that has a strictly physical component, that a person is stricken with it without having any particular role in bringing it upon themselves. There is a sense of guilt and shame that often is associated. The person who receives or experiences a disorder acts in particular ways that are embarrassing, frightening, alarming to others. You're shunned, and the family is shunned as a consequence, too. So there is a period during a psychotic episode when a person is in the midst of that psychotic episodes, when it tends to push people away and people are frightened, embarrassed to be seen with you. There's a kind of guilt by association that all those who are touched by the disorder are somehow tainted by the disorder. And consequently, if there is a death in the family, when that death comes, all that network that one would normally have to support a person when someone passes away has been erased. People are have been pushed away or have fallen away, and doubly, people are don't know how to deal with suicide. They don't know how to provide support. They don't know what to say. Consequently, the people who are intimately affected by suicide are often left on their own to cope with it. It does make you feel like you've been erased from the community. It does make you feel invisible, and people don't know who to turn to, who to talk to, where to get support. It's a very difficult situation.
About a decade later, in the mid-1980s, when Olivier Liv began to experience abnormal thoughts and shared those with you, you invited him to visit you in Montreal, and you write, "I closed the blinds, sat in a chair in my kitchen, and made a list of the things I would do differently this time."
I think that you're on a learning curve. A steep learning curve, certainly, and a long learning curve when you are related to someone who has schizophrenia. And certainly I know things now that I did not know when my younger brother first experienced schizophrenia. I had no idea. I had no idea how to cope with it. I had no idea how long-term a disorder it was. I think many people, when they first receive the diagnosis, hear that a family member has schizophrenia, the desire is to get it diagnosed, to get the person into hospital, to understand what treatment is necessary and get them fixed, and then normalize things. And it's not that way. It certainly isn't that way. There is the possibility of coping with the illness. There's the possibility of successfully thriving. But there's no disappearance of the disorder. There's no getting rid of it, and it can return. A psychotic episode can return if pressure becomes too intense, if certain circumstances change, and consequently the individual most affected by the disorder has to cope with it as a lifelong thing, as does a family who is intimately related to that person. I think patience is required. I think a sense of patience for oneself, patience for everyone in the family, an understanding that it's nobody's fault. All those things are necessary. Of changing expectations, you know, sometimes I can recall with Ben of wondering when things were going to return back to the way they were, and understanding that nothing ever returns back to the way it was. There's no going back. There's a way of reconfiguring a successful outcome, of looking at the future and finding hope. But there is no going back. And I think those are all, you know, important lessons that one has to learn.
Listening to People First Radio, I'm Kevin. Bitter Medicine, a graphic memoir of mental illness, is the story of the Martini family. Olivier, an artist who was diagnosed with schizophrenia in his early 20s, drew the illustrations, and Clem, a playwright and professor at University of Calgary, wrote the accompanying words. The book is described as a poetic portrait of illness and as a vital and timely call for action. Clem Martini joins us on the phone from Calgary. Clem, your youngest brother, Ben, passed away before what you describe as the great closing of the 80s, but Olivier was diagnosed in the midst of that time period. Tell us more about this great closing and how it directly affected Olivier and your family as a whole.
Well, there's been a movement in the treatment of mental illness. There was a period in time when those who experienced mental illness were simply gathered into large institutions. Often those institutions were underfunded. There was little practical treatment for those people. Often they were just holding bins. And to a large degree, pretty grim and expensive to operate. Knowledge of the mental illness increased and greater research was performed upon the mental illnesses, it was learned that many of the disorders responded to drug treatments, and consequently people could be put on medication and lead lives, more autonomous lives, and it was realized that perhaps the institutions weren't as necessary as they might have been. Which is positive, but the downside is this, is that individuals like those who experience schizophrenia require continued support. They may lead autonomous lives, but the need for support is essential. And that was the plan. As these institutions were shut down through the 60s, 70s, and culminating in the 80s, as these institutions were shut down, the thought was that the funds that had run these enormous organizations would be channeled into support agencies that would help those with mental disorders integrate into the community. But instead what happened is that those funds were simply eliminated. It was hospital after hospital was cut, program after program was cut, but that funding never ended up following the patient. And consequently, what's happened is we've seen an increase in the incidence of homelessness, where people who normally would have been within a kind of infrastructure of a hospital, There's no hospital, there's no bed, there's no support, and there's no support on the street either. And instead you see many, many individuals who are left to their own devices on the street. And I think that the rise in the incidence of a kind of homeless generation is directly correlated to the closing down of institutions and the lack of support that has followed the patient. Likewise, right now, there is an enormous population of people with mental disorders who are simply channeled into the prison system. It's been estimated that the largest constituency of mental illness now exists in the prison system, where they people may be diagnosed for the first time, may receive treatment for the first time. Both of these occurrences, I think, are shameful and cast a very bad light on how the public has treated mental illness and how mental illness is funded. Yes. It's been described as the low person on the totem pole, as the orphan child of the healthcare system. It truly is invisible to the public. It doesn't get the same kind of support or funding as any of the other major kind of healthcare issues. And I think that it requires attention urgently.
Clem Martini, you and your brother Olivier were recently interviewed on CBC Radio in Calgary. Olivier described the book the two of you created together as kind of like making a map of the past. Tell us about the writing of the book in the last couple of minutes that we have here.
It was an interesting experience. Interesting and long term. My brother had been drawing for decades, and we had talked about trying to find an opportunity when we could find a way to give public exposure to those drawings and perhaps work together. We had written an article together. I wrote it. He illustrated it for a magazine, Alberta Views. And that article had been nominated for a journalism award. And subsequent to that, Freehand Press had approached us and asked if we would like to work on a book together. It was like examining our lives, of plotting it on a map, of looking at the past and trying to find our way from a distant time to the present. And talking back and forth, him, my brother, with pictures and illustrations, and myself with words. He would sometimes draw something, which would spur me to recollect something. And sometimes I would write something and ask him to draw to it. So it really was a collaborative endeavor, and sometimes very difficult. I mean, there's lots of things that one thinks about. That are hard to articulate, difficult to describe, and difficult to kind of think about for a long time. I mean, if you know, there are painful memories that are we often skip past. But to honestly investigate this, it required that we A, think deeply about it, and B, find a way to communicate it. Back and forth. So it was interesting but challenging.
Olivier and Clem Martini's book is called Bitter Medicine, a graphic memoir of mental illness. It was published by Freehand Books. Thank you very much, Clem Martini, for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks very much. Best wishes.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
That book, Bitter Medicine, a graphic memoir of mental illness, can be found in Nanaimo at Backpage Books. Backpage Books is located in Nanaimo's Old City Quarter in the Heritage Mews at 321 Wesley Street. Once again, that's Bitter Medicine, a graphic memoir of mental illness.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.